Brexit means Brexit.
Brexit is unumstossbar.
Rocket Man should have been handled a long time ago. He's fired!
Au nom du peuple français!
Wir schaffen das.
Make our planet great again.
Don't worry, be happy.
I will kill you if you destroy my country.
Better is always possible.
Let's do this!
I ain't spending any time on it.
Hello, I'm Brett Mason in the gallery for SBS World News. This week, the 45th Australian Parliament farewelled one of its self-described big beasts, former Attorney General George Brandis. After 18 years in Parliament, the Queensland Senator used his 45-minute valedictory speech to take a parting swipe at his right-wing coalition colleagues.
Historically, parties of the centre-right have opposed the left's authoritarian mindset, with arguments which elegantly balanced classical liberalism with its belief in the freedom of the individual, with conservatism with its respect for the integrity of institutions and the wisdom of evolutionary change. That is what the Liberal Party has always done, with reasonable success, over three quarters of a century. But increasingly, in recent years, powerful elements of right-wing politics have abandoned both liberalism's concern for the rights of the individual and conservatism's respect for institutions in favour of a belligerent, intolerant populism which shows no respect for either the rights of individual citizens or the traditional institutions which protect them.
Having served as a minister in all three of the last coalition governments, George Brandis is now headed to Australia House in London.
Conducting the relationship between Australia and the United Kingdom in the coming years will be a task I expect every bit as challenging and satisfying as any I've faced as Attorney General. With the United Kingdom withdrawing from the European Union and looking to re-engage more closely with kindred nations like Australia, there has never been a time more rich with opportunity.
In a moment, we'll be talking Brexit with the man he'll replace as High Commissioner, Alexander Downer.
I think when Britain leaves the EU, it will neither be an economic disaster for them nor a brilliant economic breakthrough.
But first, here's political reporter Miles Morgan with a look at the week that was in Canberra.
Thanks, Brett. Politicians returned to Parliament this week for the first time since their summer break began in December. And do politicians have a right to privacy? It was a question many were asking this week as it was revealed by tabloid newspapers that the Deputy Prime Minister was expecting a baby with a former member of his staff. Barnaby Joyce acknowledged his new relationship ended his marriage of 24 years, but he told the ABC 7:30 program it wasn't front page news.
Obviously, it's incredibly painful for everybody involved. I can say quite openly it's probably one of the greatest failures of my life. It is a private issue, and I'm going to not go into the public arena and discuss my private life.
Another politician did open up on her private life as the citizenship crisis continued to cast a cloud over Parliament. Labor MP Susan Lamb is staunchly refusing to refer herself to the High Court over her apparent dual citizenship. In an emotional statement to Parliament on Wednesday, she said she'd taken all reasonable steps to renounce her British citizenship, but there was a reason why she couldn't provide some documentation in the process.
I want to explain to the House why I can't obtain a copy of my parents' marriage certificate. It's a complex and a traumatic story, a story that I don't usually share. One day when I was around 6 years old, my mum dropped me off at school and she never came back to pick me up.
The government's sympathetic to her circumstances but still believes she should be sent to the High Court. Opposition leader Bill Shorten says he'd consider it if the government did something for him.
What we've suggested to Malcolm is that we have some concerns about a couple of his people. He says he has concerns about a couple of our people. Let's cut out the nonsense. For goodness sakes, can't we all just act like a bunch of adults? Have a joint referral to the High Court.
The tangled web of the citizenship saga led to a new senator being sworn in this week, retired Army officer Jim Molan. He immediately came under fire for two inflammatory anti-Islam videos he shared on his Facebook account from the far-right group Britain First. The retired Major General refused to apologise.
I am not racist and I'm not anti-Muslim. They're not about Islam. They're about violence. Now, I am anti-violence and I am anti-social activity.
And he had the full support of Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull.
It is disgusting. Jim Molan is a great Australian soldier. We are lucky to have him in the Senate. He doesn't have a racist bone
Member
in his
for
body.
Ballarat.
Indigenous affairs also comes under the microscope around this time of the year. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull is preparing to deliver the 10th Closing the Gap report to Parliament, the annual update on how the government's progressing in reducing Indigenous disadvantage. It's sobering reading of the 7 targets the government set to close the gap between Indigenous and non-Indigenous disadvantage, only one is on track. Mr Turnbull acknowledged progress is slow.
We've got a lot more to do, but we are getting on with it. We are working with our First Australians. We are doing things with them, not doing things to them.
And that was week one of Parliament for the year, 19 sitting weeks to go.
In the early hours of June 24, 2016, British voters delivered their verdict on the United Kingdom's relationship with the European Union.
Well, at 20 minutes to five, we can now say the decision taken in 1975 by this country to join the common market has been reversed by this referendum to leave the EU.
It was a Brexit bombshell that continues to dominate British and European politics.
The British people have voted to leave the European Union, and their will must be respected.
As Australia's top diplomat in London, it's the job of this week's guest to leverage Brexit to Australia's advantage, a role Alexander Downer, Australia's longest-serving foreign minister, has seized with his trademark energy, enthusiasm and good humour. Hi, Commissioner. Hello.
How are you?
Brexit in one moment, but first it would be remiss of me not to start with your recent appearance in the New York Times. How are you adjusting to your unexpected role as hero of the Trump-hating left?
Oh, I'm finding it very easy. I like to be a hero to all peoples, whether they're left or right. So I just mop it up.
June 2016 in the United Kingdom, and all of the opinion polls were pointing towards a vote to remain in the European Union. In fact, early exit polls suggested that was exactly what the British people had voted for. Where were you when the 51.9% leave vote was finally confirmed, and were you as surprised as the rest of us?
I was surprised. I was at home watching the results come in, so I'd done some analysis prior to the referendum on where the early results would be and what to look for. And the first result was, other than Gibraltar, which was really not germane to this, was in Newcastle on Tyne. And I know Newcastle pretty well, and it's a university city these days, so I expected a fairly strong 60-40 Remain vote there, and it was about 51-49 Remain. So I thought immediately this could go the other way, and then that was the pattern throughout the country, that Remain never did as well as was, or almost never did as well as was expected. So, yes, mainly I'm not surprised by election results, but that time I was surprised because I thought the British people in the end, whilst I can see a lot of them would like to leave the EU, thought it would be disruptive and a bit risky to do it, so they'd probably vote for Remain. But you know, they do tough, the British. They're very tough people, and they decided to go ahead with it.
As High Commissioner, how quickly after the referendum did you mobilise and try to begin those initial trade discussions? The Brits say Australia was the first country knocking on their door.
Well, I don't know what every other country did, so I'm not sure about first, but one of the first for sure. We took a view, the Prime Minister and I discussed this after the result of the referendum, where he joyously told me that I had been wrong in my predictions, which is true. But I said to him, you know, I think we should say to the Brits when a new Prime Minister is elected, which turned out to be Theresa May, that we're up for a free trade agreement with the UK when it's possible. And so Malcolm Turnbull spoke to Theresa May, and that was pretty much the first point he made to her. And I've been making that point around London as well. So the next step was that with Liam Fox, the Secretary of State for International Trade, we set up a working group between Australian and British officials, and they meet on a periodic basis as we sort of start to map out what a free trade agreement could look like. But the UK is still a member of the EU and will be until March 2019, so they can't actually enter into formal negotiations with us until they leave the EU. So anyway, I think we've got momentum for it. I mean, we're up near the top of their list. I'm sure the United States is at the top of the list, but given the size of the American economy and the special relationship that the UK has with the US, but we'd be next in line, I think.
Diplomats in Brussels complain privately and publicly about a lack of clarity from the United Kingdom. They don't seem to know what they want out of Brexit. Are they a little more direct with Australia about their expectations?
Well, this thing about the British government not knowing what it wants out of the EU negotiations is a narrative which doesn't relate to reality. The British Prime Minister has made, during the course of 2017, two speeches, one at Lancaster House in London and the other in Florence, making it perfectly clear what Britain wants. So she's made it clear she doesn't want to be in the customs union or in the single market. She doesn't want the European Court of Justice to have jurisdiction over the UK. She wants, though, to maintain as seamless a trade relationship with the EU as is humanly possible, but that the UK is going to take back control of immigration policy from Brussels. So, this is as clear as a bell to us. And they've not been unclear with Australia in terms of a trade agreement we would have. So for a start, they say they're leaving the customs union and the single market of the EU. Therefore, they can enter into a trade agreement with a country like Australia, which they couldn't if they stayed in the customs union. And secondly, I think they agree that it should be an agreement which includes goods and services, not just a goods agreement. We want a high-quality agreement. And the British keep telling us that they support free trade and that they are the bastion of free trade in Europe. And I think that's right. I made that point earlier in the context of EU negotiations. It's the UK which has always led the way on free trade. So free trade means free trade. So we expect that they will look to an arrangement where there is completely free trade between Australia and the UK. That'd be our ambition, and I hope that that's an ambition that they would share.
So a hard Brexit rather than a Norway-style agreement. That's how you see it playing out.
A Norway agreement would be bad for Australia because that is an agreement where the UK remains in the customs union. Essentially, that means that the EU and the UK would have one single external tariff. And to maintain the integrity of such a system, the UK would not be able to enter into trade negotiations with third countries, including Australia. So that wouldn't be in our interests, and I wouldn't imagine that would be particularly in Britain's interests. The second thing, of course, about remaining in the customs union is, which some people say they want, is that all the rules and regulations, not just for trade between the UK and the EU, but for internal trade within the UK, would be made in Brussels without the British government or people having any say in the making of those regulations. I just don't think that the Parliament here would come at that. My guess is that the sometimes called rebels in the Conservative Party, the people who are particularly exercised about Britain leaving the EU, are not going to bring the government down over this. Some people might want a second referendum. That's a possibility, but I don't think the majority of Conservative MPs and Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the Labour Party, has made it clear they don't want a second referendum. It'd be very divisive to do that.
So in terms of Brexit and a free trade agreement between Australia and the United Kingdom, what are the big opportunities for us?
Look, and clearly there are some areas of agriculture where we could do better because the common agricultural policy of the EU is very protectionist. I don't think there are going to be huge opportunities for us in beef and sheep meat, but I think sugar is one area where we could do really well. I think a free trade agreement with the UK could be very good for Australian cane growers. There's a company in the UK, an old traditional sugar company called Tate and Lyle, and they use sugar cane in their mills rather than sugar beet. Most sugar in the EU is sugar beet. So they have trouble getting imports of sugar cane, and they're very keen to do a commercial deal with Australian sugar producers. So I think horticulture could do really well producing, apples, pears, citrus and so on in off-season from Europe. I think it has huge opportunities for Australia. So, I think the nervousness in the UK is in the sheep meat and, sort of Welsh Hills farmers who are sheep farmers and in the cattle and beef industry in the UK. But I don't think they need to worry because we have huge sheep meat and in particular beef markets in Asia, and we have trouble satisfying those markets. So I don't think that we'll be targeting the UK particularly. But we want free trade with the UK. And I think we're sort of over this idea that Europe should have high levels of protection for its agriculture. I think it's important. Europe generally opens up to the world, and agricultural protectionist policies particularly disadvantage developing countries, poorer peoples in the world. Europe needs to change. And hopefully the UK will lead the way.
Does Britain need Australia more than we need them, given the European Union has announced plans to fast-track separate free trade agreement discussions with Australia in the next 2 or 3 years?
Well, we wouldn't look at it in terms of whether, we need them more than they need us or the other way around. I think politically it's probably good for the May government to have in the bag a free trade agreement with a G20 country like Australia. But the Remainers will point out, well, only 1.5% of the UK's trade is with Australia. As I point out, well, it's hardly surprising because you diverted your trade to the European Union and away from countries like Australia. In 1960, for example, the UK was Australia's biggest trading partner and one of the UK's biggest trading partners. So 7% of British trade was with Australia in 1960. Now it's about 1.5% to 2%. It's because of the diversion of trade to the EU. So, I think it'll be good for both countries. I mean, there's great emotional rapport between Australia and the UK as well, as you well know. And so it makes it a little easier to negotiate these things when you speak the same language, have the same legal system, and, a very high percentage of the Australian population have their ancestry in the British Isles.
Brexit, of course, will bubble along well beyond your tenure in London and mine too. You're about to hand over the keys to Australia House to another big beast from Canberra, George Brandis. Do you have any advice for the incoming High Commissioner?
Well, he will obviously concentrate quite substantially on the trade agenda. But the point I'd make about George Brandis is that he has a lot of experience in dealing with the UK because as the Attorney General, he's been coming here while I've been here. He's been coming here, I'm not sure, once or twice a year to talk with the British government about counter-terrorism and countering violent extremism. So we have a very rich agenda between our two countries on those issues. He's known the Home Secretaries who've been in office while I've been here. That is Theresa May, who he knows quite well, and Amber Rudd, the current Home Secretary, and he knows other people in the political system here. So he'll fit in very easily and very well. I think he'll do an exceptionally good job. He'll have to think a lot more about trade, though, than he probably has had to as the Attorney General of Australia. Whereas I came here having been the Minister for Foreign Affairs, being the minister responsible for trade as well as foreign affairs as the portfolio minister. So I probably had a bit more experience of trade negotiations and trade issues than, well, not probably, I certainly had more experience of trade negotiations and trade issues than he's had, but he'll get on top of it pretty quickly. He's a very smart guy.
You have a very rich personal history with this building and this country and this city. How are you feeling about heading back to Australia? Will you miss it?
Well, I'm not sure that miss is the right word. I've really loved my time here. I've had, it'll be nearly 4 years that I'll have been here, and I signed up for 3 years, so it's been a little longer than that. And I've found it incredibly interesting. I mean, I think that's the word I would use to sort of draw together all the feelings I've had being here. Interesting. London is very much the centre of the world. It's where the world meets. It meets intellectually, it meets culturally, and it meets financially, if not across all aspects of economics. It is a fascinating place to live. I'll always retain my links to London. As for Australia House, yes, I have a long experience of Australia House. My father was the High Commissioner here when Britain joined the European Union, so I'm the High Commissioner here as it leaves. So that means, amongst other things, that I know this building, Australia House, incredibly well. And this year is its 100th anniversary. So when I think back over it, I guess my father was the High Commissioner here when it had its 50th anniversary. So how about that? I'm just looking at my children. You know, it's turned out to be a bit of a hereditary job, and I've got 4 children, and I'm wondering which one of them will be the High Commissioner here in London one day, but surely one of them.
All we need is another Downer room at Australia House here in London. Alexander Downer, High Commissioner to the United Kingdom, thank you very much for your time, and enjoy being home in sunny South Australia.
I look forward to it.
SBS acknowledges the Ngunnawal people, who are the traditional custodians of the land on which the Australian Parliament sits and where this program was recorded. We pay respect to the elders of the Ngunnawal Nation, both past and present.